You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Here's McDavid with a pass and Brough scores. Inside, Hattie for Hyman. Taps it up, doesn't know where it is. Touchdown three. Where is it? Somebody blow a damn whistle.
Auston Matthews with his 70th goal. Regular season and playoffs this year.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. This is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, it's a four-guester on the Halford and Brough show today on Sportsnet 650. It begins at 6:30. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is going to join us. Four more series. Two got underway last night. Two played their game twos last night. Devastating loss for Bo Horvat and the New York Islanders. We'll talk to Wish about all that at 6:30. 7:30, Adam Vingan is going to join the program from Nashville, covering this series, filling in on the on behalf of Sportsnet.ca. We'll talk to Adam about the Pred side of things as they look to even up their series with your Vancouver Canucks tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Adam Vingan's going to join us at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, the man that's on the call tonight, right here on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor will join us. A reminder, pregame, postgame, and Batch calling the actual game, all here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 tonight, as the Canucks and the Preds take on for game two of their opening round series of the playoffs. And then, speaking of your Vancouver Canucks, a guy that absolutely eviscerated these same Nashville Predators back in 2011. Ryan Kesler, everybody, is going to be on the program at 8:30 this morning. Kess is in town. That's right, in Vancouver for this series. He'll be joining us at 8:30 to talk about a myriad of things, including tonight's game.
He's like, I heard the Canucks are playing the Preds. I can get into the lineup for that.
That's right.
I own these guys.
4C Ryan Kesler. He could probably still pull it off.
Kessler just hanging outside the Preds arena, just staring him down. Remember me?
Just looking
I'm
at him.
Back.
Yeah. That must be nice for a player to have like a signature playoff series, you know, like when you associate. I mean, when we talked about the last time the Canucks played the Preds in the playoffs, everyone was like, well, yeah, the Ryan Kesler series.
That was the Beast Mode Ryan Kesler series. So he's going to join us at 8:30. Batch is going to join us at 8. Adam Vingan at 7:30. Greg Wyshynski at 6:30. We have a ton to get into. A lot from the off day between games from the Canucks and Preds yesterday. All the games from last night. So without further ado, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. The Canucks were originally scheduled to practice yesterday between games one and two of their opening round series against the Nashville Predators, but Rick Tocchet and company called an audible on practice. They decided to make it an optional skate. Nine skaters and the two backup goalies, Archer Seelovs and Casey DeSmith, showed up. In explaining it, Tocchet said, and I quote, "I would have rather practiced today early in the series, but I could tell the guys were spent. Usually early in a series, I really believe a team should practice for 15, 20, or 30 minutes. Rick Tocchet then added, "I'm not a morning skate guy. God bless Rick Tocchet. But I felt the guys deserve the day to rest." So there you have it. That was from Canucks pseudo practice yesterday.
So not a morning skate guy, but a rest guy.
He's not a morning skate guy.
But he is a rest guy.
He's a rest guy.
Okay. Yeah. He had one the other day. He's a body position first guy. And then you get the puck.
He understands.
He's definitely a reps guy.
He loves his reps. That's why he's a practice guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a tiring the team out kind of guy.
Right.
So, look.
Oh, you dropped a look.
Yeah, you're a look guy.
I'm a look guy.
Rick Tocchet also said that, you know, ahead of game two, he said, I think there are four or five guys that can really help us tomorrow. I thought they were just okay yesterday.
Can't be an okay guy.
So that is a nice way of saying that certain guys have to play a little bit better in game two.
What guy? What guys would that be, Jason?
Oh, you're like, oh, I think Hoglander, probably Hoglander.
Who could Rick Tocchet possibly be talking about?
Look, he also said that he didn't think the Pettersson, he thought the Pettersson line was just okay. We all know the two lines that got it done for the Canucks, right? In game one, it was the Miller line, Besser and Suter. They played unbelievably. And then the Lindholm line, which happened to have Dakota Joshua on it with Connor Garland. And those guys have really been driving the bus for the last little while for the Canucks.
Yep.
Joshua, Garland, Miller, and then whoever's with them, essentially.
Third line is now the second line. Second line is the first line. First line, maybe the third line.
Well, and sometimes those three guys were all together, Miller, Joshua, and Garland down the stretch, but they split them up for the playoffs. So, look, I again, another look. I don't like always bringing up Pettersson, but when the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks says, there were four or five guys that were just okay in game one, and we need those guys. Of course you're going to look through the guys that were probably just okay and probably the ones he's talking about. And you have to assume that he means Elias Pettersson because, as much as the fourth line also struggled and they need to be a little bit better, they're not Elias Pettersson.
Right. Okay. Well,
so I don't want to be negative here, but we went into this series going, all right, let's look at these matchups here. The Preds do not have as much depth up front as the Canucks. Mm-hmm. So, if the Canucks can get their three lines rolling and the fourth line is okay as well, then they should win this series. But let's also not act like the Canucks played a perfect game. In game one, it was a great day at Rogers Arena. Very emotional. The crowd was amazing to the point that Rick Tocchet said, I don't even know if we should practice because I think the guys are emotionally spent.
Sure.
So they made it an optional practice. I think they had some team meetings and then they said, okay, go get ready for game two. Game one is over now. It was great that the Canucks won it. They still got a long, long way to go in this series. Mm-hmm. Case in point, last night, Toronto won game two in Boston. Toronto got dominated in game one. Toronto got embarrassed in game one by the Bruins. And so I'm getting texts from A-Dog and Laddie and Halford like, oh, you feeling pretty good about picking the Leafs? I'm like, guys, it's one game.
For the record, I did not participate.
It's one game of the series.
Still feeling pretty
good. A-Dog's like, we still think the Leafs are going to win? I'm like,
yep.
Well, it's one game. I'm not going to change my pick. I admit that I was, I don't care if the Leafs lose, but for the sake of my pick, I was kind of like, oh, God, was I way off here?
Sure.
But I constantly have to remind myself, this is the playoffs, and like the playoffs aren't won and lost with one game. And the Canucks have learned a lot of lessons this season and, learning lessons. Rick Tocchet is a big learning lessons guy.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the beginning of the season.
Okay.
Okay? They win game one. They blow out Edmonton at home. Everyone's like, that's amazing. Then they went to Edmonton, and they were outshot and outplayed by the Oilers, but they still won the game. And then does anyone remember what happened in game three?
Yeah, it was the Philadelphia game.
The Philadelphia game. They go out on the road after Edmonton, and they go into Philadelphia, a team where they probably thought, yeah, we're going to blow these guys out. The Flyers are rebuilding. Look at us. We're amazing. And then they got torched, basically. Like, Tortorella hockey when it was still being played by the Flyers. You know, the Flyers dominated them. And the Canucks probably had, I don't know, maybe their worst game of the season. There were a few others in there.
2-0.
They were horrible.
They scored 12 goals in their first two games, and then they got shut out.
And then I remember the line that Rick Tocchet said, "Who are we to think we're anybody?" You know, these are the lessons you learn during the regular season that you hope are applied in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So this is a similar situation. You know, the Canucks win game one. Everyone's feeling great about themselves. The players are saying how awesome it felt to be playing in front of that crowd. Well, let's keep those feelings going then. Let's not get too complacent. And the guys that maybe were just okay in game one, not to name any names, but those guys need to step up now because you can't just rely on JT Miller to go beast mode every night.
Like Ryan Kessler did back in 2011. No, I get exactly what you're saying. And I think that's why Tocchet really tried to spin it as a glass half full kind of thing. It's like, look, and there's another look. We weren't our best in game. I think it's fair to say they weren't their best. There was a real smash and grab element of that victory on Sunday night, right? When you score the two fastest goals in franchise playoff history in the third period to go from 2-1 down to 3-2 up, there is a real smash and grab element that maybe you can't rely on for every single game because it only happens once in a franchise history. So what you're looking at here, can you keep, and I think Rick Tocchet kept referring to it as like being jacked up. Like We got to stay jacked up. We got to get even more jacked up. And a very innate, obvious way to do that is to make sure that some of the guys that were maybe passengers or spectators in game one raise their level for game two. Because the important part you brought up there was if you have superior depth at forward, maybe on occasion you can get away with one unit not showing up or whatever because collectively you've got better depth. But the reality of it is if, let's say, Miller has an off night or he's not as jacked as he needs to be, or
you know, he gets shut down by a good player like Ryan O'Reilly. Like, they have good players on the Preds.
This is where depth comes in. Because it allows other guys to step up in the absence of the void of the guys that did it the night before.
Like, I imagine Andrew Brunette has some ideas and some changes that he wants to make.
Well, okay.
After that Miller, that Miller line, you know, basically ran them over in game one, he's probably going to, he might even be like, you know, okay, we're going to put all our best guys on the Miller line. And, you know, Pettersson didn't really look like he was going, so we'll see if he can beat us.
Good time to transition into the Predators side of things here because yesterday they didn't practice at all, took an entire scheduled day off, I might add. It wasn't like they had a practice and they decided to dump it. So Andrew Brunette still met with the media, as did various players. The major takeaway from the Nashville Predators following game one is that they felt they did not possess the puck nearly enough, especially in the offensive zone. Andrew Brunette was not happy with the way that they dumped the puck in or the way that they went to retrieve those dump-ins. And he said that collectively led to why they didn't have as many shots. They didn't have the chance generation that they normally had or liked. And probably a big reason why they ended up with two goals on the night and really nothing at 5-on-5 beside the one. So if you're looking at what you might expect from the Predators tonight, I would say more energy on the forecheck. I would not be surprised if you see some of those rattling them bones hits early to try and set the tone. They also know that despite not playing an ideal game in game one, they led for a good chunk of it. And they were probably hard done by because a 12-second lapse in concentration. And Andrew Brunette framed it as such. Let's make that abundantly clear. His comments after game one were more about our lapses and our breakdowns as opposed to whatever the Canucks did to us. If they can eliminate that, they're thinking exactly what Toronto thought against Boston yesterday. Who cares about game one? We win game two. We snatched home ice advantage. We're going back home with it 1-1, and we got a chance to take a 2-1 series lead. So that's exactly what Nashville will be thinking.
It's a tough balance you have to strike in the playoffs. You want to be confident and have belief in yourself, maybe even a little bit cocky, but only a little bit, because you also have to stay humble and respect your opponent. You know, as you have said, I'm sure the Preds think they can play better. Those guys won a lot of games in the second half of the season. There's a reason they're in the playoffs, and it wasn't the start of their season. So they've faced tough tests during the regular season, just like the Canucks have faced tough tests during the regular season. The Preds held on and made the playoffs, right? They were in a race of sorts with others to make the playoffs, and they were the ones that got in. Let's talk about the games last night. Which one do you want to lead with? I guess we got to lead with McDavid because, man, the Oilers looked good last night against the Kings.
Zach Hyman scored a hat trick. Connor McDavid finished with 5 assists. Just another regular night at the offices. The Edmonton Oilers dispatched of the Los Angeles Kings 7-4 in their first round series game at Rogers Place on Monday night. It was Hyman with the hat trick. Let's hear what it sounded like, courtesy of Sportsnet.
Here's McDavid with a pass in front of the score. Inside, happy for Hyman. First career playoff hat trick.
It was maybe the most hats I've ever seen on the ice at an NHL game. It was like a teddy bear toss, for crying out loud. It was nuts. It took a long time to get everything off the ice. It was a very, very thorough and very dominant performance from the Edmonton Oilers, who were passing down low and through the crease with impunity. They were so many tap-in goals from about 4 feet out. Several of them coming from Zach Hyman. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins also got one. And then the 5 assists from Connor McDavid. LA has to go back to the drawing board big time.
Yeah.
Because they will be done in 4 straight if those games 2, 3, and 4 look anything like game one. Because I know 7-4 makes it seem like it was reasonably close, but it wasn't. The Kings tacked on a few meaningless goals late to kind of give it a cosmetic score, but they were thoroughly, and I repeat, thoroughly outplayed by the Oilers on Monday night.
Yeah, McDavid is just, he's just an incredible player.
Yeah.
And you're watching him last night, and you're like, you're going to need something more than a 1-3-1 to stop this guy. And you're right about all the cross-ice passes, cross-crease passes. I mean, that has to be a little bit embarrassing for a Kings team that hangs its hat on being able to play defensively. They were horrible defensively.
Horrible.
But here's the thing. McDavid can make you look bad, real bad. He is, like we've said, like I think Nathan MacKinnon deserves the Hart Trophy this year, but there's no doubt in my mind that Connor McDavid is the best player in the game.
Yeah.
He's just on another level. I've never seen another player like him, and it's what makes the Edmonton Oilers so scary as a team right now. It's him, and it's him and Draisaitl being driven together, and they are good enough to drive. I think the Oilers are maybe a little bit of an imperfect team, but those two are so good that I do see them as the cup favorites right now and the team to beat in the playoffs.
But now, this is not meant to say that Nathan MacKinnon isn't a good passer, okay? I want to preface it with that. But to me, the biggest difference between McDavid and MacKinnon is the passing. McDavid's vision and his ability to deliver passes and his ability to elevate Zach Hyman into a 50-goal scorer, and he had 100 assists this year, that's the difference between them. I feel like at times we should just acknowledge that if he's healthy and he's playing, Connor McDavid should win every trophy because he's better than everybody else.
Yeah.
If there's a most outstanding player,
win the Norris.
Yeah, seriously, give him the Vezina. If there's a most outstanding player award and Connor McDavid is active and playing, he's the most outstanding player. I mean, that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we were at last night. Like, I don't know how many people listening right now watched that game in its entirety, but McDavid did at times pretty much whatever he wanted. He had 5 assists and he probably could have finished with 7 or 8. And the Oilers went on to win 7-4. You know what? I'm going to park what the Maple Leafs did because we've kind of already talked about it. And I want to show a little bit of love to that series that I said I was going to not pay attention to. The Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. And for those of you that carry a grudge against Bo Horvat, you won't be down with me on this one, but I genuinely felt bad for Bo yesterday. So the Islanders, despite being badly outshot, the shot attempts were 4-1. In total in favor, like every 4 Carolina attempts, the Islanders managed to put one in the vicinity towards Frederik Andersen on goal. They were getting thoroughly outplayed, but the Islanders held a 3-0 lead yesterday in game 2 of their series against the Carolina Hurricanes. It looked as though they were on their way to even up the series 1-1, and it'd be really interesting going back to Long Island. But then the Canes decided to turn it up a notch. With just over 2 minutes remaining, and they've now clawed back from 3-0 down to 3-2, the Canes pull the goalie, and it's Sebastian Aho to tie it up at 3-3. Here's what it sounded like.
Burns in the corner to Jarvis. One-timer, score! One-door tip in, we're tied!
So you remember how in game one between the Canucks and the Preds, the Canucks took 12 seconds to score that very, very pivotal goal. Well, the Carolina Hurricanes said, whatever you can do, we can do faster. 9 seconds later, right off the faceoff, Jordan Martinuk driving a stake into the hearts of the Islanders and Bo Horvat. Here's the 4-3 goal.
Drury enters the zone, plays it in deep for Carolina. Loose, score! Jordan Martinuk gives Carolina the lead.
This was the first time in Patrick Waugh's playing or coaching career that a team that he was on blew a 3-goal lead in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Well, I mean, listen, okay, first of all, why do you feel bad for Horvat?
Because they had a 3-0 lead, and now they blew it, and now I feel like whatever tiny
he was on the ice for a lot of the goals against, or one of them, he looked pretty bad on.
He was on the ice for the Aho 3-3 goal.
Yeah, yeah.
It was pretty much his guy,
and he was not doing his
job. Not doing his job, so I feel bad for him. That's why. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, and another look. We're up to 7 in the opening segment of this show now. My brief explanation on this is. I understand why some people harbor a bit of resentment to him for whatever he said when he left, but I felt like he did a fine job as captain. He was thrust into a tough spot here. And when the new regime came in and decided that he wasn't going to be their guy, he was gone. I give him gratitude, and I say thank you, sir, for your time in Vancouver, and I feel bad that his team is now probably going to lose in 4 straight.
Well, that's very big of you.
Yeah, how dare you?
I was a big person.
I personally was laughing watching that game. The Carolina Hurricanes outshot the Islanders 39-12. The Islanders are not a very good team.
Do you know how many shots the Islanders blocked? 35.
There were something that the shot attempts were something like 120-30.
That was 4-1.
Carolina just owned them. I could easily see Carolina getting to the Stanley Cup final. That's not a hot take. They are a well-oiled machine when they're on, but they have to get over the hump. You know, they've won lots of first-round series. They just haven't gone much further than that. The final game that I guess we can talk about just for a couple minutes here before we get to Wish was the Vegas Golden Knights winning game one down in Dallas. And Mark Stone made his presence felt very early in the game. He scores on what, his first shift?
Yep, opening goal of the series. It's none other than Mr. Spleen, Mark Stone. Do we want to hear what that one sounded like? I think we do, laddie. Here's Mark Stone, first goal in an eventual 4-3 win for the Vegas Golden Knights over the Dallas Stars in Dallas.
Stevenson off to Eichel, feeds the point. There's Hanifin. Long wrist shot. Oh! Score!
It actually deflected off his spleen.
His enlarged spleen.
Guess who? Yeah, we all know.
Yeah, we knew exactly who was
the shots
score.
On goal were a story in that game as well. 30-15 for Vegas. So Vegas gets 4 goals on 15 shots. And Jake Oettinger, if you didn't pay attention to the Dallas Stars this season and you just assumed, oh, Oettinger, he's good, right? He was their number one worry heading into the playoffs.
And the crazy part was he actually went on a heater over the final 8 games of the regular season, which Dallas also, not surprisingly, in correlation, went on a heater as well. First game in, laddie, you're the goalie expert. Is it safe to say that 11 saves on 15 shots might not get it done in this series?
Yes, I would, Mike Halford.
So
it's not great.
Yeah,
not
so great. That is the only series, Jason, of the 8 in which the road team won the opening game. Home teams were 7-1. That was after Edmonton, of course, took care of Los Angeles last night as well. So be very interesting to see how that one goes, because now Dallas has got a lot of pressure to win game two.
So the other news of yesterday in the NHL is that Lindy Ruff is going back to Buffalo to coach the Sabres. Of course, those two were together all the way back in 1999.
This time.
When the Sabres lost to the Stars in the Stanley Cup final, the controversial goal that won that for the Dallas Stars. And it's crazy that Ruff was the head coach of the Sabres the last time they went to the playoffs.
Yeah, I know.
He was the head coach there for, what, 14 seasons?
And he played 10 seasons.
Yeah. There. You know, so some people will say this is a retread, bringing in Lindy Ruff. But
because
Lindy,
it is.
No, but Lindy Ruff is a much bigger thing in Buffalo, much bigger person in Buffalo than just a retread. If some other team had hired Lindy Ruff, you might be like, oh, okay, all right, fine. And the Sabres have tried everything. They've gone with, you know, the inexperienced head coach. They've gone with, like, a guy like Ralph Krueger.
Soccer coach.
You know, they brought in Phil Housley before, and, you know, he was not only had he played for the Sabres in his career, he was the hot assistant because he'd been the assistant coach with the Nashville Predators. I don't even know how much he's worked since he's been with the head coach. Didn't work at all. They had Dan Bylsma in there. That didn't work. You know, this is, for me, I actually kind of like this hire, if only because, you know, I think Lindy Ruff is a pretty capable head coach. He's seen a lot in the NHL. He has a tie to the Buffalo Sabres. And listen, you know, if it doesn't work out, the Sabres will be like, well, we're used to it. So,
yeah.
And if it does work out, it's a great story, right?
So we can continue this conversation coming up next. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN to talk about this and a whole lot more going around the NHL as the Stanley Cup playoffs continue to roll. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
It's Canuck Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
On a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough, the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is going to join us in just a moment here. The highlight of hour one. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle you, get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street. In Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. Every Tuesday he joins us on this show, but now it's a playoff Tuesday. Greg Wyshynski here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Wish?
How is everybody? I'm sure everybody's doing pretty good in Vancouver these days, huh?
Yeah, we're super excited after game one. Now we're worried about the emotional letdown for game two. So that's kind of where we're at right now. It's actually Rick Tocchet was going to have a full practice yesterday, but he made it an optional because he was a little bit worried about the emotional letdown after game one. So we'll see how the Canucks respond tonight against the Nashville Predators. But Wish, as for last night, who had the most impressive victory? Because I think all four had pretty interesting storylines. The Leafs evening up with the Boston Bruins after their game one performance, which wasn't very good. Auston Matthews scores his 70th goal of the season, as everyone in Toronto told us. I don't think it works like that. They beat the Bruins 3-2. The Hurricanes came back from 3-0 down. They and dominated the Islanders. They won 5-3. Mark Stone returned to the lineup for the Vegas Golden Knights, scores a goal. They beat the Dallas Stars 4-3, and Connor McDavid is an assist machine in their 7-4 destruction over the Kings. Which one would you choose as the most impressive?
Sports updates at the top and bottom of the hour.
Yeah, did you like that? I can do that. Yeah, if it doesn't work out this, I can go back in time 30 years ago and do sports updates.
Oh, my goodness. No, I would say the Leafs are probably the most impressive and most important because, there's no way they win the series if they don't win that game. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, not only because they would be down 2-0, because of the way Boston won the first game. I mean, it was just like it was so emphatic and so very Boston Leafs that they needed to flip the script in game two, and they did. It's not as easy as Boston just going back to Swayman, because Ullmark wasn't necessarily the problem last night. You know, it was just a good Leafs win. And now, you know, assume they're going to get Willie Nylander back for game three back at home. So that win could really kind of set things in motion for them in that series in a way that maybe a lot of us didn't anticipate after the first game.
What do you think is going on with Nylander? Has there been an official story on this yet?
There hasn't been. The only thing, you know, people have been kind of like combing through their last game of the season, like it's the Zapruder film, to try to figure out exactly where this guy got hurt. But, you know, I know that they've said it wasn't an off-ice injury and it wasn't a lingering thing. So, you know, you put two and two together and it's probably an injury that he suffered late in the season and no one's really sure what it is. But, you know, he's back in the on the ice for them. So you assume he's working his way back, and they were either just being precautious or he wasn't quite there yet. So we'll see what happens. But I mean, I think the anticipation is that he's going to return to the series if he's back on the ice.
So if the Bruins go back to Swayman for game three and they win game three and Swayman plays well in Toronto, what do they do?
They stick with their rotation. Yeah. I really do. I mean, like, I think they can justify that by saying that Ullmark wasn't the problem in game two, because he wasn't, right? But, like, I see what you're saying. I mean, if you have proof of concept that every time Jeremy Swayman plays a playoff game, they win, it's hard to really keep this dogmatic approach to a goalie rotation. That being said, like, I do wonder if we're being a bit myopic about it, because, like, in the regular season, it is now commonplace to have, like, three goalies. And they just play all the time. And you know, rare is the team that has a Connor Hellebuck or, you know, with Thatcher Demko when he's healthy, that can really, like, just, you know, play 60 games or 65 games in a season. So the idea that maybe we should change our thinking as to how teams approach the playoffs, where it's not just like, here's the guy and we ride him into the ground, and more like, let's just, you know, play the vibe and also think about the long game here, where we don't want a situation where our guy's completely gassed by the time we get to a championship round. I think there's a reality in the multiverse where that's okay, and if that's the approach Boston wants to take, again, they've got the best goalie tandem on the planet. Like, if any team's going to take that tack, it's going to be them.
Well, at least they'd reserve Swayman for Game Seven then. That's when true. It goes Swayman, Ullmark, Swayman, Ullmark.
Well, you apparently know your odds and evens pretty well. But yeah, he would be the Game Seven guy.
So the Islanders blow a 3-0 lead against the Canes yesterday. I watched the post-game media availability with Patrick Waugh, who, by the way, they threw out this stat, Sportsnet stats, that in his playing and coaching career, he's never blown a 3-goal lead in the playoffs. And he looked like a guy who had blown a 3-goal lead in the aftermath. Very, very, very distraught about it. Now, I know it's the playoffs and you're not in any real danger until you lose a game at home, but how damaging is that loss going to be for the Isles?
No, they're very much in danger. By the way, is that guy on lithium? Like, where is the Patrick Waugh I was promised?
What happened?
He's going to get, like,
what happened here?
Super. Yeah, he's where's the super fiery guy? Where's the guy that's slamming his hand on the desk like an old dictator, upset about his team blowing a lead in within 9 seconds in the third period? This is what we came for. We're not getting it. It's like sweater vest torts now. I'm very disappointed by this whole thing. No, they're in deep trouble, man. Like, not only do they blow that game last night in a dramatic way, and as a Devils fan, it was very familiar to me. If you remember back, was it 2009 when the Hurricanes scored those two goals late in the game?
Yes.
UC Jokinen scoring with like 0.2 seconds left or something. Like, it had that vibe last night. And in many cases, you don't come back from that. I mean, they're going home down 2-0 to a team that is vastly superior, that is predicted by many people to play for the Cup this year. They had a 3-0 lead in the game. And, oh, by the way, they had a 3-0 lead in a game where they were just incredibly outplayed by the Hurricanes up and down the ice, to the point where they only had one shot on goal in the third period. And I'm sorry, you could talk about all you want. Oh, we went into a defensive shell and we weren't really trying or whatever. But if you manage one shot in the third period, that means you're getting your behinds handed to you. So it's not just blowing the lead. It's the game itself. And that's two in a row against this Hurricanes team. And yeah, I mean, maybe they get a boost going back to UBS, and there are definitely some things you can latch on to for the Islanders in the first two games of the series, but it doesn't change the fact that you might have just pissed away your chance to win the series in 9 seconds last night.
Well, we've had conversations about the Islanders and their future under Lou Lamoriello, and, you know, we openly wondered if the Islanders missed the playoffs, if Lou Lam would still be in charge next season. Is that conversation still valid? Because the Islanders made the playoffs, but, you know, it's funny. You break down the series and you're like, one of the problems that the Islanders might have is they're not very good. compared to the Carolina Hurricanes. Is that still valid, or do you think making the playoffs is good enough for Isles ownership?
I think the real question is, does he ever go? Like, it's clear that they bought him in to be a major part of not only building a team, but the organization. My God, the guy helped design the locker rooms in the new arena. So there's clearly a level of respect there between the Islanders ownership, John Ledecky and Lou Lamoriello, to the point where you wonder if it's not one of those situations that we always envisioned for other old GMs, which is you get bumped upstairs, you're kind of still doing things, and then guiding the ship, but there's a new GM that you've handpicked. And in that case, it could be his son, for all we know. So I'm intrigued to see exactly what happens if they did decide to make a change at the top, because I'm not entirely convinced it would mean that Lou's leaving the organization.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Non-playoff division news here, Greg. Last week we had you on the show, and I believe you were the one that alluded to the fact that Buffalo might go the Lindy Ruff route in finding its next head coach. Lo and behold, you were right. Did you have some intel that we were unaware of? Were you surprised yesterday when you heard the news, or did you know that this was in the works?
I know, I wasn't surprised at all. It's funny to see how much spin they had to put out there immediately about the hiring, in the sense that Kevin Adams in the press release was like, this is not a nostalgia play.
Yeah, right.
Lest anyone think this is like the Ghostbusters reboot or something with Lindy Ruff. The bottom line is that the last time the Sabres were relevant, Lindy Ruff was the coach. And it's hard to like get that out of your mind insofar as why they make the decision. He does have some proof of concept with young players in New Jersey. I think, it's sort of on the record that Jack Hughes credits Lindy with making him a better player. And when you have elite talent saying this guy helped me get better, well, that's a really important, endorsement to have for a guy who's going to be coaching Owen Power and all the other young players on that roster. I think he's an interesting hire in the sense that he did for the Devils what the Sabres are hoping someone could do for them, which is to elevate them by a exponential number of points from year over year. But the problem is that the Devils then lost all of those points in the following season. And the thing that happened in between those seasons was Andrew Brunette came aboard as the associate coach, and then he left, and then Nashville got good and the Devils got bad. And so you wonder exactly if you wanted to look at that season where the Devils made the playoffs, won a playoff round, as an anomaly. Well, the anomaly was that Lindy Ruff had an associate coach that was there for 1 year, and the Devils had their best year under Lindy Ruff, and then that guy left, and then they stunk again. So, it's not exactly adding up for him. But look, he's a familiar face. I think he can do some really good things for that team. But I do wonder ultimately at the end of the day, if there isn't a little bit of redundancy. Like, you just fired the teacher. You just fired the guy that works with the younger players and makes them better. Like, I feel like there was probably another solution they could have gone with, or go the completely opposite direction and hire Seth Apert from the AHL, or hire David Carl from the University of Denver, and have a coach in more of that Spencer Carberry role of growing with the team rather than someone who's, old enough to be their grandpa.
Do you think if they had maybe a more experienced general manager, they might go that route? And bringing in a guy like Lindy Ruff is almost, he's seen a lot in the NHL. He's been through a lot. And Kevin Adams as an executive, I guess he's been with Buffalo for a few years now, but you wouldn't call him experienced.
Well, there's two ways to answer that. One is that if he's in charge, then this is classic hockey nepotism, because he actually coached under Lindy Ruff in Buffalo for 2 years. So, it's the thing we always say in the NHL, as soon as somebody gets hired, well, check their Facebook, check their LinkedIn, who are they related to in the front office kind of deal, right? Or you believe what a lot of Sabres fans believe, which is that Kevin Adams is a GM in name only, and that he's serving at the pleasure of the Pegula family. And if, Terry gets on the horn and says, hey, I liked Lindy Ruff. He was the coach when I bought this team. And right. When I bought this team, we used to make the playoffs, and now we don't. So let's go back and get him. Then you're probably hiring Lindy Ruff. So, there's always that underlying how much power does Kevin Adams have within the organization. It's necessarily fair to him, but it's without question one of the things that Sabres fans are constantly wondering about when it comes to the big, big decisions from this franchise.
Let's stick with the coaching theme. For just the eighth time in NHL history, a coach is facing the team that fired him in the previous season in the following postseason. That guy is Peter Laviolette, who is now coaching the New York Rangers against his old team, the Washington Capitals. An awkward reunion, as you tweeted out about and then wrote about. What are Lavi and everyone else having to say about this very awkward reunion?
Yeah, I got it on the site today if you want to check it out. It's just an anomaly, although oddly it's happened twice in a row. last time this happened was Pete DeBoer coaching the Dallas Stars against the Vegas Golden Knights last year. Yeah. And by the way, Pete DeBoer was the only coach of the seven that had experienced this that lost.
Oh.
So coaches coaching against their former team are 6-1 in those series, which I think bodes well for Peter Laviolette, as if the Rangers needed any more justification for being a heavy favorite in that series. It was interesting to go back and see the reaction of the Capitals when he got fired and then see the reaction of the Capitals in facing him in the playoffs. There was a certain amount of like, it's a business, you know, we understand that the GM is going to make this call and that's going to be the right call for the team. And then when you circle back with the Capitals at the beginning of the series, I mean, there's nothing like you would have thought that Laviolette coached that team for 30 games, the way they reacted to like going against him and the Rangers. Like it's a business, you know, we don't really think about it, like all this stuff. And then in Laviolette's case, it was interesting to see exactly how much of the tendencies in particular on the power play he knew from the Capitals and having coached them. And he said, you know, look, there's some stuff I definitely know. And there's some like insight I can give as to what these guys like to do on the power play. And certainly that lends itself to Ovechkin. And I think he's underplaying it. Like the Rangers were 10 for 10 in killing penalties against the Capitals this year, and then 4 for 4 in game one. So he's clearly picked up some pointers in having coached these guys on the power play. When you go 14 for 14 against the team on the power play and you coached that team last year, I think he's downplaying how much intrinsic knowledge he has about their tendencies and his ability to stop them.
I'm glad you mentioned Peter DeBoer. I did want to get to that series because we obviously focused on Mark Stone and his magically recovering spleen and then scoring the first goal yesterday. We haven't really focused a lot on Dallas, who I feel maybe, I don't know if trepidation or nerves were creeping in when they got matched up with Vegas, because Vegas dominated them during the regular season and Vegas was the team that eliminated them from the playoffs last year. But I just get that sense that the Stars might be that team that were cruising at the end of the regular season, got that first overall seed, and then we're like, uh-oh, we got not just Vegas, but this Vegas team with all these guys coming back.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I do think that, you know, remember how like when the Blackhawks got the first overall pick, everybody pointed to like a certain game against Pittsburgh or something where like, if it goes the other way, then they don't get the lottery pick.
Yep.
And some such, or maybe it was Pittsburgh not making the playoffs. I don't remember what it was, but the sliding doors moment of this season could easily be the LA Kings beating Chicago and the Vegas Golden Knights losing at the end
last
of the season.
Yeah.
Right. Because that gave Edmonton LA. And as we saw last night, they know how to beat LA. And that gave Vegas Dallas, and quite frankly, Vegas is a really, really good hockey team that might be able to take out Dallas for a second straight season and end what many thought could be a cup run for the Stars. Now, I think last night was a case of Jake Oettinger being terrible, which is certainly not anything any of us anticipated because of how well he played down the stretch. And like the reason he was terrible against Vegas last year is because he was exhausted. Well, he wasn't exhausted now, and he was playing the best hockey of any goalie in the last month. And yet I think you could put the loss on him in a lot of ways last night. The Mark Stone thing, let's just do this real quick. Like, if you're somebody who thinks there should be a salary cap in the playoffs, then you want the playoffs to be worse. That's the bottom line. Like, you will make the playoffs worse if you create some sort of, like, you got to be under the cap with the lineup that you ice. Who cares? Like, just, I want ringers all over the place in the playoffs. Like, that's not the point. Like, the playoffs are awesome. Don't make them suck. But you can logically say that if a player is on LTIR on game 82 and the beginning of the playoffs is 4 days later, it's not as if he's exponentially more healthy than he was 4 days ago. It's just that they didn't want to play him because, you know, they're doing the, if it was a playoff game, he'd play. Well, that means he's healthy enough to play. So the simple, easy solution to the Mark Stone problem, if the GMs wanted to get off their behinds and actually do something about it, is to not allow that player to play at least the first two games of the first series of the playoffs. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to ban him for the first round. That's stupid. There's guys that are legitimately hurt that are going to try to come back in game three that couldn't because of some draconian rule. But if you're healthy enough to play in game 82, which he was, then you should miss the first two games of the series. I think that's a reasonable you know, way to handle this LTIR thing without getting real stupid about it.
Do you think that it will be addressed in a couple of years when the CBA is opened up again?
Well, I mean, there's always a chance when the CBA opens up that they do play around with it. I think the players, in some cases, might want to have some say insofar as, like, the team's ability to keep them on LTIR, you know? That's the only wrinkle I could think of. I mean, because, frankly, the league and the GMs have shown absolutely no appetite for changing these rules because they all benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's on the players to be like, I think this is unfair. I want to play hockey. Just because you can't manage your cap should mean that I don't.
Yeah, but even the non-playoff teams like it because they can get more at the deadline for their assets, I suppose.
Precisely. Yeah. So like, you know, look, we're never really going to know the granular level investigations that go on here with the NHL. Like, the, you know, Kelly McCrimmon screams to the heavens about how this is all in the up and up because the NHL, you know, investigates it. But Lord only knows what that actually means. They might just look over medical charts for all we know and not actually do an examination of the player. But again, we don't need to get to there. We don't need to have, like, special doctor stormtroopers showing up at Mark Stone's door. We just have to say, if he doesn't play in game 82 and he's on LTIR, then he doesn't play in games 1 and 2 of the series. It's the simplest fix. But again, it requires the GMs to identify a problem, and I'm not convinced that they think it's a problem. Maybe Jim Nill will. Maybe Jim Nill is like, this is a problem. We got to talk about this. But nobody else will. So we'll see.
I'm just imagining the NHL's doctor police kicking down Mark Stone's door and then being like, it's like, oh, right in my spleen. Come on.
And again, at the end of the day, they want these teams to be able to play around with the cap and have relief.
Yeah.
It's probably like, it'd probably be like Trump's doctor, like just going in and being like, this man is really, really bad. This spleen is terrible. And he certainly won't be able to play for at least 4 more days.
Wish you the best, bud. Thanks for doing this today. As always, enjoy all the games tonight and the rest of this week. We'll do this again next Tuesday.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So the schedule tonight, we get game 2 of the Rangers Capitals series from Madison Square Garden. That's the 4 o'clock our time game. Rangers lead that series 1-0. Then at 4:30, Chapter 2 of the Battle of Florida, the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 2, Florida leads the series 1-0. It is going to be from Florida, Miami specifically.
Sunrise.
We got game 2 of the Jets and Avs series at 6:30 our time, so a half hour before the Canucks game starts. Big story there, I guess, is who's going to play in net for the Colorado Avalanche.
Oh, we know.
Sorry?
Anunen's still sick, apparently.
Oh, is he? Okay,
so it will be Georgiev.
Okay, so it'll be old Georgiev will be in net again.
It'll be 4 goals before the Canucks game even starts.
Yeah. If he can hold them to under seven goals, I think they got a shot to win tonight. And then, of course, the nightcap, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena, Canucks, Preds, game 2. Canucks lead their series 1-0.
I wonder how much criticism Chris McFarland is going to get if goaltending costs the Colorado Avalanche this series against the Jets, or even, you know, when they get eliminated, it's because of the goaltending, because so far he's been pretty bulletproof in terms of the job he's done in Colorado.
He's done a very nice job as their general manager, but yes, you're right.
But,
the goaltending,
you know,
is a problem.
And there's two things, right? Like, he made a big trade for Casey Mittelstadt, and he made a big bet on Casey Mittelstadt, and it cost him Bowen Byram, which is a pretty significant piece. And I know Sabres fans are pretty excited about the potential, at least, of their blue line with all, you know, the 2 first overall picks plus Bowen Byram. I mean, in theory, if you get the right situation there, that could be a heck of a blue line. And I think everyone's just a little uncertain about Casey Mittelstadt in Colorado. And then you combine that with the goaltending, and, you know, Chris McFarland might actually get some criticism this offseason if the Avs don't win the Cup.
Well, I know we're up against it for time, but Laddie, Georgiev statistically at least was very good last year. He had a .915 save percentage in both the regular season and playoffs. He had 40 wins, which was a career high. And we all know that wins are the most important goalie stat. But was that sort of like smoke and mirrors, like the behind-the-scenes numbers, the deeper analytics suggested he wasn't good?
I didn't think he suggested he wasn't good. I think they just suggested he was middle of the pack on a good team, right? Which boosted his numbers a little bit. So that helped, but yeah, it's a curious move when they went out to get him as their guy, and they paid him like he was their guy. So, yeah, at the end of the day, you're judged by the players that you bring in and the players that you choose to identify as your players. And he was from day one the guy that they wanted to go get. So this is all on the GM there.
Right. They paid a high price. I mean, they paid 3 draft picks, I think, to get him.
Yeah,
they
gave him the only goalie available, right?
They gave him a big contract.
They wanted him.
Okay, coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, open segment at 7 o'clock. If you want to weigh in, get your thoughts out there, preview tonight's game, Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. You can also get What We Learns in, by the way, because we're going to be doing those at some point during the show, but probably not at our regular time, because in the 8 o'clock hour, we got Brendan Batchelor at 8, and then Ryan Kesler, former Vancouver Canuck, noted Nashville Predator killer. He's going to be joining us at 8:30, so we got a big show ahead, lots to get into. Don't go anywhere. Keep it on the dial. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.